failure for failure is of course is negative, but then if there is failure plus self-reflection and critical analysis, so if we ask students to okay, they fail during the process, but then they we give them room to self-reflect and understand, learn from their lessons, so that then they can do better. I think this is where we can see the positive aspect of failure.
Welcome to Talking Creativity, the Crania podcast from Dublin City University. I'm Ciarán Dunn.
I'm Joe Binetti.
And I'm Tim Hannigan. In this series, we talk to academic experts on creativity, creative practitioners, people from the creative industries and the arts, and those working across disciplines and at the boundaries between scholarship and practice.
The aim of these conversations is to dig into creativity, to figure out what it means, and above all, to explore ways to encourage it in any field or discipline.
The Crania Project is based at Dublin City University and funded by the National Forum for the Enhancement of Teaching and Learning in Higher Education. In this episode, we are joined by Auriel Boulot. Auriel has vast experience across many different organizations in different countries. She works with the European Commission in the area of strategic partnerships. She has worked as a project manager with UNESCO in the area of international education. She's worked in educational development for the Sorbonne University, specifically in the area of innovative learning and teaching enhancement. And she's also done her PhD at NUIG in Galway, specifically on the topic of creativity. So, Auriel, thank you so much for joining us on the Crania podcast. We're delighted to have you. Just to start off, perhaps, could you give us a bit of information about your own background, your area of expertise, and your interest in creativity?
Okay, so I'm Auriel, and I'm French. I'm from France. And I did a PhD in Ireland, in NUIG. I started in 2008 and I finished in 2013. And the topic was on the issue of creativity, and more specifically, it was on the constraints on teaching in higher education. So yeah, why this PhD? Why in Galway? Because I've been always interested in creativity. I did a lot of creative arts when I was younger, outside the classroom. So I studied music. I did a lot of dance, like ballet dance, for many years. And actually, I wanted to be a teacher in visual arts. But in France, I was a very good student, and in France, when you were a good student at that time, you had to go for like higher education, do like very traditional higher education. Go for higher education and do the grande école. So I didn't manage to go to. Actually, my parents didn't want me to go to study arts. So I think it was a revenge for me, like to be able to study creativity as a PhD student.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And when we talk, we've guests on the podcast, obviously from all over the world, and it's been fantastic to engage with so many people from diverse backgrounds and disciplines. But we always have a standard question that we start off with, which is around when it comes to creativity, what is the word that you would associate with creativity as a point of entry into discussion around it, and why would you select this word?
So to me, there are a couple of words. There is the notion of identity, the notion of social imaginary, and the notion of autonomy. So, well, actually, when I did my PhD research, I studied I studied the why teachers, higher education academics were not creative. So I tried to understand why. And what I discovered is that when you listen to academics, you get from them that the reason why they are not creative, it's because they are constrained by a lot of external constraints like time, administrative burden, peer pressure. I mean, there are a lot of elements that are constraining them. But also what I found out is that there is also a constraint that is very much related to the relationship that they have with their disciplines, because disciplines are very much they dictate somehow a set of norms, beliefs, conducts, and so academies are very much tied to those disciplinary communities and so let's say those disciplinary imaginaries, and they have some difficulties in stepping away from those beliefs and norms. For them, it's very complicated to imagine that there are other possibilities, especially in terms of teaching. So this is why, for me, creativity is very much related to this capability, this ability of being able to reflect on who I am, my context, and the ability of being able to transform my identities so that then I can engage in new practices. So there is also this notion of autonomy, because the autonomy is really about like being able to reflect on who I am, what I do, and then being able to change that.
So is it a case then that when you talk about identity and autonomy, that it's autonomy and your ability to cross disciplines or to connect different disciplines with each other, to engage, to occupy this interdisciplinary space. And then that informs your identity, because now you're not identified exclusively with one specific domain or discipline.
Yeah, because actually, when I did my research, what I did is that I took a sample of academics from different disciplines. So from the social sciences, from the art sciences, I had a wide range of disciplines involved in my research, and I put so it was academics from NYG, and I put them together, and actually we asked them to try to engage in creative activities among themselves. And this is how I realized that it was extremely complicated for them, because they had real difficulties even in talking to each other, because they had different languages. And one day we asked them to bring some articles from their disciplines so that they could share and they could exchange. And it was extremely complicated for them, because they couldn't understand each other. So to me, this is one of my conclusion of my studies, is that really, to be able, although it's very complicated for academics, it's very important for them to bring academics from different disciplines so that they can broaden their minds and change their mindset, which is very, something that they are not asked to do very often. Asking them to move away from the spaces where they are working on usually, because when I was doing my PhD, I was doing my PhD in the center, in a very, very specific building of the university, and we had academics from different buildings. We are coming to a new space, and even that for them it was new. I mean, this is what one of the things that they said during the research. Even changing space for them, it was something new. So at the end of the day, what happened is that at the end of the day, it was so difficult for them to be able to exchange and interact. They did not manage to create anything together. But to them, it was a very life-changing experience, because they understood also the difficulty. Like, and it started to make them realize that maybe they were constrained also by their disciplinary culture.
I think that's a really interesting idea, that perhaps in academia, you know, lecturers or academics are employed to be experts in one particular domain, and perhaps that the idea that they would be encouraged to deviate from that might seem contradictory or oxymoronic, perhaps. And going back to the idea of creativity, because obviously across domains or disciplines, it can vary. Can I ask you to tell us a bit of what is your understanding of creativity, and does it change from place to place or from discipline to discipline, or are there universal characteristics to it?
Well, yeah, no, it really varies from one person to another, from one discipline to another. And yeah, this is also one of the first thing I did when I started my PhD, because I mean, before focusing on the topic of the constraints, I mean my initial research topic was really understanding creativity in higher education, but I started to interrogate many academics from many disciplines, and I found out that it was so complicated to get a common definition that I changed my focus. But there are so many characteristics. Like so I gave you my what I think creativity is, which is the capability of transforming our own identity and our practices. But then when you ask people in academia, you see that there is first of all this notion of risk taking that comes back a lot. Then imagination is a big thing, and process also versus product. What do we mean by creativity? Is it like a product? I mean, education, is it a product? Is it a process? To me, it's more a process than a product, but it varies from one person to another. Yeah, and also, yeah, this link between autonomy and creativity is also recurring. This is something that comes back a lot.
Thank you. And so we talk about, you know, interdisciplinarity, this idea of transformation, which I think is really interesting. And then things like risk-taking and encouraging imagination and focusing on perhaps process as opposed to giving disproportionate attention to the output, to the product. And so then in the context of higher education, how do you think we can actually foster that type of culture? How can we foster the creative capacity of our students or indeed our staff?
Well, to me, fostering creativity in students means first fostering creativity in teachers. You cannot do it otherwise. I mean, and how to do that? Definitely, we need to have like more investment in staff development. This is the key. More resources to support centers like the one where I did my PhD, which is the Center for Center for Excellence in Teaching and Learning of NYG, where they are really supporting staff in transforming their ways of teaching and via either ICTs or even without any ICTs. And they are very, I mean, somehow the higher education management doesn't understand how much it's important to have those types of centers and how beneficial they are to academics. So yeah, definitely those type of investment, especially because those type of centers or whatever, those type of staff development activities, they are here also to bring people from different disciplines. So that then they can change and they can open up to other possibilities. So definitely this. Yes, and also I think so there is this, the staff development, the resources in terms of staff development, help for teachers, support, and also shifting the understanding. I mean, maybe changing the practices in terms of assessment, because as we said, like to me, creativity is really much more about the process than the outcome. And actually, when I was doing my PhD, I interviewed some academics from some visual arts disciplines, and especially the former dean of the College of Bern College of Arts. I don't know if you heard about it. Was one of my examiner. Like Tim Jones.
Yeah, I know.
And it was very interesting because I asked him like, what's your definition about creativity? And well, I don't remember what he said, but he mentioned this notion about assessment, and he was saying when I asked, because they have I think he was talking about the you know, they have these PhDs, applied PhDs in creative arts. And he was saying that at the beginning of a PhD, I ask a student to have a declaration of intention. The student has to explain where he would like to, or he or she would like to go in terms of his or her work. And then I ask them to reflect on how their final outcome redefines their intention, and not how the outcome fulfills the intention. So it's really about like reflecting on the process and what they learned and how they change, yeah, at the end of the project. And so it's no more about the final outcome. It's more about the process and the evolution and the transformation of identity. So then I don't know how it's done, like in terms of like criteria to assess, because I didn't look into it. But I found it very interesting, because at the end of the day, the process is as much important as the product, especially when you train graduates that are entering the workforce. When you're working in a job, like you have to also, I mean, the product is very important, like you need to deliver and so on, but then the process is also super important, and especially like being able to reflect on how you work, adapt to your colleagues. You need to know a lot about yourself so that it helps you also to achieve what you have to achieve. So
clearly, you know, the importance that you assign to the process is huge, and that the process is really, really is key. And what comes up from time to time, or at least in my reading and my own reflections on creativity, is around the process and the concept of failure.
Yeah.
And did the idea of failure emerge, or what are your thoughts on the relationship between this concept of failure? And I'm saying failure because sometimes I talk about failure as pre-success rather than having a kind of a pejorative or a negative association with it. But what are your thoughts about this relationship between failure and creativity, and failure as a part of the creative process?
Well, I mean, when you look at the way the assessments are made, you are there is absolutely no room for failure. Whereas, yeah, if we try to make sure that the creative process is really, yeah, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I mean, yeah, definitely failure is part of the creative process. I mean, to me, you have to fail in order to understand yourself more, and you need to, to go back to what I was saying about this notion of autonomy and this ability of being able to reflect on who you are, your context, and so on. Of course, you need to fail to understand. So to me, there is no room for failure in higher education. But there should be some space for it. I had one of my participants during a PhD research who said creativity goes back to what makes us human. That was the definition. His definition, and I found it very interesting, because definitely it's about that, and failure is part of what makes us human. So
this is very philosophical
and
very true. And so, and I completely agree with you, and I think if we look at some of the most impactful creative outputs or innovations, you know, and you unpack the experience, that process, it's you know, it's defined by a lot of what would have been referred to as failure. So if we see that there is value in the idea of normalizing failure in the creative process, but at the same time, as you were saying, the idea of failure is, you know, has really negative connotations in any type of educational environment, particularly as you get into secondary and into higher education. The idea of failure is like a sinister, it's a threat. Have you any thoughts on how we could reframe the idea of failure so that it is seen as a constructive and productive component of a creative process? How might institutions reframe and try and reimagine the values that are associated with failure? Because currently, it's as I said, it's very seen as a negative thing, almost universally. Whereas if we said, okay, you know, there's different points in the process, and ultimately, okay, you want you don't want to fail at the very, very end if there is an end point, but that we need to reframe how we see or what we call failure during the process.
Yeah, well, I mean, this goes back again to what to my definition of creativity. I mean, we can see, I mean, failure for failure is, of course, is negative. But then if there is failure plus self-reflection and critical analysis, so if we ask students to okay, they fail during the process, but then we give them room to self-reflect and understand, learn from their lessons so that then they can do better. I think this is where we can see the positive aspect of failure. And it could be part of some type of assessment, like definitely. I mean, then it's a matter of like, finding the right criteria for assessment. But yeah, so this is not, I mean, yeah, if there is the possibility to fail, but then to be able to self-reflect and learn from the lessons so that then you can improve, I think it's a completely different change of approach. So, and it also implies that the teacher has to take some risks, because there is this notion of unknown, you know? So it's not like when you design a course and you know exactly what you want to ask for to your students and their learning outcomes are set. And so it's also a question of like, yeah, taking risks as teacher. So it's complicated, but it can be done. Like, and this is why, I mean, sorry, I'm going back to the staff development and the support, but this is why it's so essential, because this is what also what I found out during my my research, is that really academics are scared like to try new things, because they've been doing things all their life in a certain way, and it's complicated. But it's not only about academia. I mean, it's everything. I mean, everybody in life, like when you have certain types of habits and you've been doing things for many years, like changing is complicated.
It is, for sure. And I think perhaps also in the case of academics, they tend to be people who have performed very well in a certain way, in a certain area. You know, to arrive at the point of being an academic, it kind of implies that you tend to perform well within that specific set of values. And then to encourage people to perhaps deviate from that or to do things differently, that might seem almost contradictory to them. But at the same time, as you were saying, when I asked you how we can foster creativity, and you said in our students, you said, look, it has to come from staff. So staff clearly have to be role models. They need to be role modeling healthy behaviors. When I say healthy, in terms of fostering creativity. So what types of behaviors do you think we as staff, as academics, should be modeling for our students, so that they may have the confidence to dabble more or to invest more time in their own creativity?
But definitely, there is the notion of trust, and this is something that came up a lot, throughout my PhD, also research. This notion of trust, you need to be in a trusted environment. I mean, you need to, to be in an environment where you feel the trust, so that then you can try out new things, So this is one of the first thing I would think about, like teachers have to foster this trust environment so that then their students can be more creative.
And sorry, is that trust the idea of feeling safe and secure and that you're not being judged or you're not being criticized?
Yeah. Because actually this is also something that came out from my research, is that academics, one of the reasons why they don't feel, why academics do not dare or do not, I mean, have some limitations in terms of like being more creative in their teaching, is that they have a lot of peer pressure. They feel judged by their peers. So it's the same for students. Like if they are in an environment where they don't feel judged, where they know that they can try and they can fail and they can restart and redo and so, but then there is also the notion of time, and this goes back to the constraints that academics have. When you are under time pressure, you have like some curriculum to teach, and you have some exams at the end of the, you need to plan, I mean, you need to plan some exams at the end of the year. And do you have time to give your student time to engage in creative processes that might take some time? And
So it's limited. So you have this idea of creating an environment where there's trust, where there's safety, where you encourage diverse perspectives and, you know, whatever, divergent thinking, for example, but then also that you need to have the time and the space to allow students to fumble around the place. And once again, as in your role as an expert in a particular discipline, the idea of encouraging fumbling or what might be seen by others as an inefficient use of your time would go against a lot of the values that have been kind of conditioned into us, I suppose.
But this is very interesting, because when you discuss with academics, this is what I found out in my research, is that when they think about, I mean, when they think about research, for them, research equates creativity. I mean, because there is this notion of, I mean, this possibility of exploration and time and space, and but they cannot, I mean, but for the teaching is completely different. So it's very also interesting, like because they are able to associate creativity with research, but then with teaching, it's much more complicated.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because the idea that, you know, that creativity is, I suppose that creativity is almost a criterion in research, the idea that you're trying to produce outputs that are both original and adding value, if you want to go back to the traditional definition of creativity, or at least the criteria according to which creativity is sometimes evaluated. But yeah, so in a research, that's normalized, whereas in teaching, it can be more focused on the curriculum.
Yeah, and to them, it's not really valued. When I reread what I wrote on my PhD, I read the discussions, and some part of the discussions I had with some academics, and at some point, some were saying, "But okay, but what is the point for us to be more creative? Because I mean, it's not valued by the institution." You don't get more promoted. I mean, you don't get in terms of promotion or.
And is this a cultural thing? When I say cultural, I mean, in the different countries you've worked in, have you noticed that that the value systems in higher education changed? Like you're saying, let's say in the Irish context, that promotion, which is basically the cultural value, what you value. You know, so how you get promoted is a manifestation of how you are valued, is typically based on research, or that research outputs have a disproportionate weighting over and above, let's say, teaching and learning, over and above community engagement. Is that the same in different national educational environments from your perspective, or from your experience, rather?
Oh, well, so I So you will be surprised, but I worked in, so I know the UK and Irish context well. And also I worked in the French system and now I'm working in the Swiss system. And I can tell you that the French system and the Swiss system are way, way behind. So what I'm saying is that, okay, yeah, fine. In the UK, Anglo-Saxon system, the research is still this is the most important aspect, but in terms of promotion and so on, but still, the teaching has been entering into the discussion, let's say. Whereas in France and Switzerland, we are far away from that. I think it's not even, when I worked in France in 2014, it was not even part of the promotion system. So this is why also the Belgium, France, Switzerland are quite far away in terms of all this teaching and learning topics. But of course, if you go to Canada or if you go to Australia, or I'm sure it's very different. I'm sure they are very far advanced. But I think the Irish system is not too bad in terms of all those questions around creativity, teaching and learning, and so on. And it's been 4 years, and it's still very interesting that now. I did my PhD 10 years ago, and you're working on this topic still. After 10 years, so it's great. And it's still up to date. It's still a topic. I think for forever, it's going to be a topic that is very important.
I think that's one of the beauties of creativity, that it is it's an organic, evolving, it's always relevant. There's never a time when we would turn around and say, I don't value creativity. So it's very much an ongoing process.
But this is true that 10 years ago, at the policy level, there was this kind of confusion between the use of ICTs and creativity. Policymakers were thinking, okay, if we put ICTs in the classroom, things are going to be, the teaching is going to become creative, the learning is to become creative. And I used to work in the European Commission in the Directorate for Education and Culture. And this is true that all these notions of how we support academics to become creative, how we support them to use ICT so that then their teaching can become creative, was out of the scope. And now with the COVID crisis, the pedagogy, all these issues around pedagogies are finally out. And we understand that it's not only about ICTs and using Zoom with your students that you are going to become a creative teacher. We need to invest in pedagogies and supporting teachers, supporting them to change their pedagogical practices. So it's very interesting because it's still part of the discussion at the political level, but things have been changed a bit. And thanks to the COVID crisis, actually.
So COVID has accelerated trends in multiple areas. So it has also accelerated the shift towards online learning or the merging between education and technology, I suppose. And then the challenge is how we can upskill our community so that in order to leverage the affordances of technology in terms of being creative or in terms of just delivering content. So when we talk about creating cultures of creativity, so and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing is, I think fundamentally that it has to come from the top down. The people in positions of power have to genuinely value the notion of having a culture of creativity, and that involves investing in the cultivation of that type of culture, in architecting that type of culture, and that means in staff development, in promoting interdisciplinarity, so giving colleagues the chance and students the chance, the opportunities to dabble in different areas, in perhaps reimagining what assessment might look like, in reframing this idea of failure in ensuring that we create an environment that is defined by trust and feelings of security and curiosity, where people are encouraged to open their mind and play with ideas. And that also that people are afforded the time. So time is a form of resource, I suppose, to allow ideas to percolate, to allow you to be exposed to diverse knowledge sets, to allow you to try and make connections between those diverse knowledge sets. So it seems to me that, am I correct in my understanding of where you're coming from on that?
Yeah, completely. And when I'm listening to you, it confirms to me, it's like this, what you're saying, what you're describing is, I mean, it can be applied to the higher education environment, but it can be applied to any type of like work environment or social environments, you know. So it's and this is also what makes creativity so interesting. It's not, it's a very transversal notion.
For sure. It's one of the key transversal competences, I would say. So you may well, as we come to the end of our discussion, our conversation, and I know you've touched on a lot of this already, but we always finish again with a standard question. That is, that were you to have a magic wand, what changes would you implement in higher education in order to foster this valuable, productive, rich culture of creativity that we pursue?
Well, I'm not going to be very creative this time, but again, I'm going to repeat myself. I mean, if we had more investment in staff development to support academics, to be able to try things, to be able to change their mindset and take risks, would be already fantastic. I know that the colleagues that are working in those in this area, usually in universities, are overwhelmed. Like they are up to their it's very, I mean, they have so many demands because the academics need this support, and to me the higher management, higher education management, should, the top leaders, they should understand this, which is not the case actually, and this is problematic.
Yeah, I think that it's a very, very good point. And it's a challenge, I think, that every university or perhaps every ministry of education at a national level needs to engage with, not just reflect on, but actually engage with. If indeed we want to create these creative cities and creative communities and impact change in a positive way, it makes sense that we have to invest in creativity as the source of this innovation that we're looking for in the world. So I think on that note, we'll bring our conversation to a close for this episode. Auriel, thank you so much for joining us on the Krenia podcast. It's been fantastic having you. I'd say I hope it was interesting for you as well, and also to revisit your own research and perhaps compare where things are 10 years later. That in itself is probably an interesting an interesting project to do. But thank you so much for adding so much value to our podcast.
Thank you very much.